Good day, everyone. Welcome back to Dreams Warp, the podcast designed to awaken you to a new reality. For today's episode, you know what day it is. It's Sunday, and that means it's time for our Zen stream. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. All right, let's go ahead and get into this. My name is George, and if this is your first time here, first, I want to say thank you for checking out the podcast. The purpose of the podcast is to explore the mind and the depths of consciousness that create it. Ultimately, the podcast is here to help you gain a sense of mastery over your reality and your life by mastery of the mind. So if that's something that interests you, you have definitely come to the right place. And I'd like to remind you that if you find the content of this podcast helpful, I hope that you'll consider sharing it with others. That's a wonderful way to support the mission of the podcast. Now, we have a few series here on the podcast. We have our Tuesday Taoism, we have our Zen stream on Sunday, and I do try to throw in an extra episode here and there, on a separate topic, something related to mental health. That is my background. I've been a psychotherapist now for about 16 years. We cover things like mindfulness, meditation, healthy living, managing stress, basically anything and everything that helps you reach your goals, achieve your dreams, and just live an overall happier day-to-day life. Now, today being Sunday, we are doing our Zen stream. And last week for Zen stream, I had found a talk given by Alan Watts. And I really, really enjoyed reading that to you all and talking a little bit about that. And I figured today I would search for something else. And I did find something here. And it really, I just get real here for you for a minute. It really got me thinking. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But it just kicked up some ideas and in my mind. And I wanted to go ahead and try to share them with you as best I can. We always have, the limits of our language to consider, especially when we're talking about things like Zen and Taoism. Language always seems to fall short. But hopefully we use language like any other tool to convey ideas and learn and feel better and grow, basically. So I hope that, the words I share with you today serve to that end. So I did find this short. It's shorter than last week. I know last week's reading was a little long. So I did find a couple of, just two paragraphs here. Alan Watts shared, I believe this is from one of his books. He wrote quite a few books. This is called The Wisdom of Insecurity is the name of the book. And he shares this very interesting perspective or explanation on one of the fundamental issues with the way that our minds operate. And I'm of course, when I say mind here, I'm talking about that typical, day-to-day practical kind of rational mind, which we all have and use to think, to talk, to plan, to coordinate. So I'm going to read this. Let me just read this. And then I'll talk a little bit about what came up for me. And hopefully we'll get something good out of this for today. Okay, so let's start this off. This is Alan Watts, he says here. The primary consciousness, the basic mind which knows reality rather than ideas about it, does not know the future. It lives completely in the present and perceives nothing more than what is at this moment. The ingenious brain, however, looks at that part of present experience called memory, and by studying it, is able to make predictions. These predictions are relatively so accurate and reliable that the future assumes a high degree of reality, so high that the present loses its value. But the future is still not here and cannot become part of experienced reality until it is present, since what we know of the future is made up of purely abstract and logical elements, inferences, guesses, and deductions. It cannot be eaten, felt, smelled, seen, heard, or otherwise enjoyed. To pursue it is to pursue a constantly retreating phantom, And the faster you chase it, the faster it runs ahead. This is why all the affairs of civilization are rushed, why hardly anyone enjoys what he or she has, and is forever seeking more and more. Happiness, then, will consist not of solid and substantial realities, but of such abstract and superficial things as promises, hopes, and assurances. End quote. That's the end right there. So, a little dark there, a little depressing, but you can't deny that it definitely speaks to a truth, right? And it's something I think that if you're listening, it poses a very strong argument for how our typical mind operates. And I want to use this here as a springboard to talk about something related, maybe referring back to this. But it's also that's kind of something that's kind of venturing off in possibly a different direction. And I basically want to focus in here, hone in on the part of the mind that he refers to here as the ingenious brain, the part that looks at present experience, the part of the mind that looks at the part of present experience called memory, and by studying it is able to make predictions. That's the part that I want to talk about. So what I want to say about this part of our minds and the way that it operates, okay, is I believe something that I've been thinking quite a bit about lately is that part of our brain is the part of our brain that creates lack, that is always seeing things that are missing, things that are not here yet, things that we hope to achieve at some point in the future. And because it perceives this lack, in a way, you could say that this part of our mental functions, this part of our mind, is the creator of space, right? It could lack space. Lack is the same thing. And this part of our mind also knows very little about how to hold still, right? It has a hard time with that. It's always bouncing around. You know, in Zen, they call it the monkey mind, right? It's always thinking about this and thinking about that and thinking about the past and thinking about the future and projecting and planning and plotting and scheming and trying to figure out how to get something, how to, right? It never is able to just anchor itself in the present and see, in a sense, the fullness of each and every moment, right? And that the part of us that can experience the fullness of each and every moment is the beginning, where he says here, the primary consciousness is what he calls it, okay? And he goes on to describe it as the basic mind, which knows reality rather than ideas about it, right? So that one, that part of our mind, I guess you could say from a certain point of view, that it's a little bit more, almost like an animal type of mind, a more basic type of mind that is more closely connected to our five senses. Now, let me be clear. I'm not suggesting that there's a certain aspect of our mind that is bad and a certain aspect of our mind that is good and a certain aspect of our mind that you should try to get rid of and another aspect of our mind that you should. But I do believe that an imbalance of where we spend most of our time, okay, the type of mind that we use most often, if it is out of balance, then you can experience a resulting, you know, negativity or positivity in your life, depending, you know, on how happy you want to be, how fulfilled you wish to feel at any given moment. So it is important to be able to, as I've said here before, and as Eckhart Tolle says in his book, Power of Now, to be able to use certain aspects of our mind as tools, right? We use it as a tool. Okay, well, you know, I need to plan for retirement, right? Logical. I need to plan for this trip that I want to take next year. Fine. Then you use that aspect of the mind that, you know, can predict and can make plans and can, and you do that. But once you're done with that activity, right, you no longer need that aspect of the mind, then you're able to shift back into, you know, this other mind, the more basic mind, which is able to perceive the present moment as completely and totally full. Okay, now I want to get this idea a little bit more. I want to talk about this, of the present moment being full, and how the other part of our mind, which always is predicting and planning and plotting and scheming, how it always perceives lack and emptiness. And in order to do this, okay, we're going to use a little bit of a visual here that I'd like you to just picture in your mind, and this might be a little weird. I hope it works for you. It seems to be working for me, but just try to use as a metaphor the universe, right, as a sphere, right, just a big sphere, and it is completely full inside. It lacks absolutely nothing, okay? It's just a round sphere, completely full, fullness of everything you could ever possibly want. The way I kind of relate this, or the feeling, in other words, that I'm talking about, is almost as if like a baby in the womb, right? It's totally, you know, snuggled in there. It feels safe. It feels calm. It's surrounded by fluid. It's, you know, and then obviously we have, which some mental health people in the past have described, you know, birth as like the original trauma, you know, where you come out and suddenly you're like screaming and yelling, right? And you feel like, I don't know if you've ever noticed, it's an interesting fun fact for you. When babies are first born, they're born with only two intrinsic fears, only two fears wired into us. One is the fear of loud noises, and the second is the fear of falling. Now, interestingly, this fear of falling happens because when we come out of the womb, we experience gravity for the first time, right? So you come out and you may actually see a baby when you lay a baby on its back, and it was just born, it's a newborn. You'll see it flail its arms because it feels like it's falling, right? And so this is, in a sense, it's our first experience of emptiness, of space, right? We've never really experienced that before, because within the womb, everything is full, whole, complete, much like the sphere that I was just telling you about, this universal, this metaphor for the whole universe, full, complete, everything present. Now, what happens is that in order to have the experience of emptiness, of space, right, of lack, our senses, as I've discussed here before, blocks out a lot of this fullness, right? So in other words, right now, wherever you're sitting, whatever you're doing, you are literally surrounded by stuff that you cannot perceive. Your eyes can't see certain things. Your ears can't hear certain frequencies. You can't smell certain things. Your senses block out a lot more information than they allow you to experience. So in other words, we are, in essence, creating space, creating lack. And so the more we rely on the part of our mind that sees lack, then the more we tend to feel uncomfortable, like something's missing. And like he describes here in this reading, we tend to look more to the future to save us from something. But this is, of course, all based on a giant misperception, right? Because our senses, like I said, blocking out a lot more of what's there than it's letting in. Now, I just want to pause here. Let me allow a quick word from a sponsor, because I want to come back and tell you how you can start to kind of fight against this tendency of lack, of perceiving lack. Okay, just bear with me one moment. All right, thank you for your patience. I am back. Let me just take a quick moment here, remind you that if you ever want to reach out to me, ask a question, express a concern, or give me an idea for a future podcast episode, you can always email me at elucidatetherreal@gmail.com. Or you can come on over to my YouTube channel by the same name, Dreams Warp. Find any one of my videos, doesn't matter which one, and post a comment under it. I get alerted right away. Say, hey, I just heard your podcast, had a comment, question, concern, or suggestion. And I could respond to you there in the comment section of the YouTube video. Also, I recently launched a Twitter account. You could send me a private message there. And you should follow me there on Twitter, because I do post things regularly. And retweet some things that I think just serve as nice reminders to focus on your breath, focus on the present moment, focus on your practice. So make sure you follow me there for that good stuff. And finally, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts and you are enjoying the content, I hope you'll take a moment and just leave a nice rating and review. It's another nice way to support the podcast. Really appreciate it. All right. So all that being said, I hope that these ideas that I've been discussing are coming across clearly. We've been talking about This obviously, these two paragraphs I read to you, Mr. Alan Watts, and how we talked about these concepts, the primary consciousness, and then this other aspect of our mind, the ingenious mind, he calls it, which predicts, right? And I'm taking those two ideas, the primary consciousness, which is aware of the present moment and only the present moment, and then the ingenious brain, which is predicting, planning, plotting, scheming, and always, generally speaking, always perceiving lack, things that are not here. And it relies, like he says here, in this reading, it relies on hopes, on assurances, and promises to feel some kind of safety, some kind of control, some kind of joy. So we obviously can use the ingenious brain, as I was just describing, for practical matters of everyday living. And Eckhart Tolle talks about that also in his book. But we do want to balance that out. And I think that that's where practices described in traditions like Zen and Taoism really come into play big time, because they do so much to focus on coming back, returning to that primary consciousness. In the Tao, they refer to it as the primal identity. In Zen, I guess depends on what school of Zen you're talking about. They call it some call it the don't know mind, stuff like that. But it's basically a lot about returning to the five senses, returning to the present moment. I mean, right now, you know, in mental health, even there's a huge, huge comeback of mindfulness and bringing attention back to the present moment. So obviously, there is a trend occurring now, which I think is a positive one, of how important it is to balance out that projecting mind, that future-oriented mind, which always sees lack, perceives emptiness, balancing that out with the primal mind, right? Becoming more present moment aware, becoming more connected to our five senses, and really placing a lot of attention, so to speak, on our senses, what is being perceived at this moment. And the more you do that, the more you start to dispel that illusion, that delusion that things are missing. And this is something that I've referred to here in a couple podcast episodes recently and on my YouTube channel, is that every moment when it appears is 100% completely full. Nothing is ever missing, right? You never look around and say, wow, this reality is missing something here. That never happens, right? Every moment is 100% completely full. The only reason that anything seems to be lacking is because of that ingenious brain that is always plotting, planning, scheming, seeing that something isn't here yet. Now, you know, I need this first. You know, it's relying on the hopes, the assurances, the promises. And so that's not to say that we don't have, some of us have issues right now with which we are dealing. But what I'm saying is that even before the mind can put something together and say, this is an issue, right? If we pay only attention to our five senses, there is a plethora of information, right? There's tons of things we can hear. There's tons of things that we can see, that we can smell, that we can touch. The amount, the sheer amount and volume of sensory information that is available to us at every given moment shows us how full each and every moment is. And even, as I said recently in another episode, when we focus on anything, including the lack of something, instantly the moment becomes full of the awareness of that lack. So there is never anything missing from any given moment. And that's a teaching that was given also by a Zen master, Rinzai. He used to, with his students, according to what I read, raise his finger in the air and ask students, what's missing from this moment, right? And it would direct their attention to the present, and you would hear everything, see everything, touch everything, smell everything, and really see how full each and every moment is. Problems appear when we shift into that ingenious mind, and suddenly there's a past, there's a future, there's stuff we have to think about, there's stuff we have to figure out, right? And we slip into that mind of abstractions, of predictions, and all this stuff. And like I said, there's a time and place for that mind. I'm not saying you have to get rid of that mind 100%. It's about being able to shift back and forth between the two and find that balance. Now, coming back here for a second to that metaphor of the sphere, right? So we have the true ultimate reality where the sphere or the universe or whatever you want to call it is full. Nothing is ever missing. But because of our five senses, it's almost as if we hollow out a lot of aspects of that sphere, right? It's not truly hollowed out. It's just our senses, our perception that seems to hollow out aspects of it. And now things appear missing, right? Like coming out of the womb, right? Everything is here. Everything is present. Nothing is missing. The universe is 100% completely full. In fact, the only reason that time appears, okay, is because of the space that we have created. You've all heard of the time-space continuum, whatever. I mean, I don't want to get too far off here into, you know, crazy ideas. But the point is that time cannot exist without space, right? It's basically, time is a measurement of space. Ultimately, there is no space, right? We create it because it's a byproduct of the way that our brains operate, right? It can't really perceive the whole sphere at once. It's too massive. Our brains cannot possibly process it. So what it does is that it takes it a piecemeal, right? So we have a limited range of our senses. And our senses, like I said, block out a lot more stuff that it could let in because our brains would literally be overwhelmed. So as we are experiencing the whole, the one in pieces, the way that the pieces get organized creates the illusion of time, right? There's like first I experienced this, then I experienced that, then I experienced this, and it creates this illusion of time, right? Of things that happened in the past, things that may happen in the future. But ultimately, those things are not real. They're just a byproduct of again, our senses. So how do we get around this? How do we start to balance out? And excuse me, I have to cough here for 1 second. every time I cough, I think, oh my God, coronavirus. Anyway, so how do we balance out these two minds? How do we return more to the primary consciousness, as Alan Watts calls it here, the don't know mind, as sometimes it's referred to in some schools of Zen or in Taoism, the primal identity? Well, here's what I have found that helps me. Is we at times have to focus on something that is not moving like that ingenious mind is, right? As I said earlier, the ingenious mind is always moving. It's always perceiving space. It's always perceiving lack. It's always planning toward the future or looking at the past. It's always creating this emptiness, this vacuum, which is ultimately not real. So what we have to do to combat that or to balance it, better word, balance it, is we have to place our attention on something that is not moving, something that can be still, right? Many meditation practices talk about stilling the mind, but let's be real here. Does that mind ever actually hold still, completely still? The answer is no. Thoughts are always popping in there. They're always bouncing right now. I mean, there are times where it's less active, right? Where it is a little more still. And how do we get there? Well, the key, the secret here is body. The body is the closest thing to us that we can observe 100% completely directly, that is, can be held completely still. And part of that body is our breathing, our heart rate, our basically our physicality. It's the closest thing to our direct experience that we can feel fullness inside of, right? And you hear this mentioned also in Eckhart Tolle's book where he talks about the inner body. That's a good way to put it. But the idea is here is that our physical bodies can be held perfectly still. And this is something that I very strongly advocate in meditation, is that when you're doing your meditation, you hold as still as you can. It's kind of funny because when I sit with my son to do meditation, you can see, you know, how he has a harder time holding still. And I always tell him, you know, when you can't hold still, when you're fidgeting, fussing, you're itchy, you're this, you're that, you have, you know, little sores, you need to adjust, you need to, it's a reflection of that mind that is bouncing around, that is active, that is thinking, that is uncomfortable, that is searching, that is planning, that is remembering. It's very, very similar. So as you focus on keeping your body perfectly still, eventually the mind can follow, right? That part of the mind, the ingenious mind, can slow down, focus on that stillness, and it will eventually, it will start to come back to the primal identity, come back to that don't know mind, come back to that primary consciousness, as Alan Watts calls it. So it's a wonderful, wonderful practice. This is why I'm such a strong advocate for meditation. But meditation is not the only way. Other physical practices like exercise, like yoga, all these things can kind of bring you back into your body. Because again, the body is the closest thing we have that we can feel that fullness, right? We can feel the solidity of it. We can feel how physically there's nothing missing, right? It's the body is 100% full. It's almost like by entering your physical body fully and inhabiting it fully and feeling it from within, you can sort of get a similar feeling to in the womb, right? Feeling inside, feeling as though you are 100% real, 100% there. I hope this is making sense. But it's very, very powerful practice. And I believe you get closer to that level of present moment awareness through something like body awareness, as opposed to trying to attain it simply through your mental faculties, through your thoughts, right? Through just quote unquote stilling your mind, right? I love how, you know, it's said so often, oh, don't think about that. Still your mind. Okay, how? How exactly do you do that? And I'm telling you how. It's through focusing more on the body, okay? You could also do it through your five senses, right? So observing something that's not moving would help, possibly. That might be a good practice for you. You have to find what works. But what I'm saying is that the more you focus on something that appears to you as being physical and solid, even though ultimately we know that it's not, it's still an apparition that appears as a result of your five senses, it's the closest thing we have to experiencing our true identity, was 100% fullness, 100% stillness, 100% present, fully here, no time, no space, right? Just fully here, right now. And you could do that. You have the tool right in front of you. It is your body. So take advantage of that. I hope that this information today, this talk today, was helpful to you. Again, you could always reach out to me at the methods I mentioned earlier. Stay tuned. I'll be back on Tuesday with another installment of Tuesday Taoism. And make sure you follow me over on YouTube and on Twitter. I'll get some good stuff there as well. I really want to thank you for listening, and have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day.